Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Over at watch.freetalklive.com, or you can listen through that method. Just don't watch it, and you'll be listening. Over at watch.freetalklive.com, the gentleman here in the studio, Captain Kickass and Peoples Mountaineer, will be hosting Beer Talk Live. And Beer Talk Live is brought to you by Captain Kickass and his new EP.
Oh, I've sponsored the show, right?
Yes, you have.
Forgot about that.
Eleuthromania, your new EP. The songs came out officially on the 4th of July on Independence Day.
Independence Day, yes.
Yep. And there are three tracks. They are available online at CaptainKickass.com. And they rock.
Thanks, man.
I really enjoyed listening to them.
What's your favorite track?
I would have to say it is the Contaminated Mind Wear. It's my favorite track. But they're all good. They're all very very heavy metal tracks. So if you like some metal, you'll really love the new Eleuthromania EP. And if you've heard the tracks, you can obviously go and purchase them because, well, you didn't do this for free. It costs money to produce things like this.
And a lot of time.
And they're well out of time. And you've been, you know, so you're selling these for some amount of money at Captain Kickass.
$20, yeah. These, so I printed 30.
I was talking about the digital downloads.
Oh, the digital downloads.
I hadn't even mentioned the physical.
The digital media downloads vary in price depending on where you get it from. So if you're on like iTunes or Spotify or something like that, you know, they're, I don't know, $1, $1.29, something like that per song. So maybe it's $3-4 for the whole EP. I was selling the advanced copies for $15 on my website if you wanted to pre-order. And then I printed up these physical pieces of merchandise, these USB cards.
Right.
I printed 30 of them for Forkfest, Porkfest, and branded them specifically for that. I sold out. They were popular.
Wow, like, that's nice.
Like, I was going to do two different, we'll call it sessions, performances, if you will.
Yeah.
And I only did one because I sold out.
That's cool, because you never know what to expect.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I didn't sell out of T-shirts or anything like that, so, you know, take that for what it's worth. But they were popular enough that I went ahead and I printed a limited edition run of 100 more USB cards. You can get there through CaptainKickass.com. There's a player at the top of the page. If you click on the word buy in the player, it'll take you out to my Bandcamp page where you can see photos of this thing. I'm going to put up a video that sort of gives you a demo on how these work, how to open it, how to, you know, what it contains, that kind of a thing. The video is actually already done. I've got it hosted somewhere. I just ran out of time today to put it all together. But there's only 95 left that people have found out about them. They're like, dude, can I get one? And so there's only 95 left. So if you want to get one, it's $20. It contains all three songs.
Some bonuses.
There is some bonus features on there. There's a song called Dichotomy that I did a remix on in, I don't even remember what year. It was like a decade ago or more. I put that song on there. I put something called Gray Day on there, which was myself and my friend Michael Gordon, who was playing drums over at my apartment one day. And we just sort of recorded this thing just to have something to jam out. So I put them on the bonus features. And
sweet.
I got something else called the Fiera Bender on there. It's me and my friend Steven jamming out to something. So there's some bonus features on there. Lyrics are on there. All three music videos are on there.
Nice. Those aren't even out yet, are they?
There's been a delay with the distributor in releasing the videos officially.
Oh, really?
So the only
place... You can't just go and put them online? The distributor has to do it?
I can.
Okay.
I just haven't done so yet because, well, I shouldn't have to. I have a distributor for this.
Sure, yeah. Okay?
so that being said, what I instead of just going ahead and putting it online, I put it on these USB cards.
Uh-huh.
So right now the videos are exclusive to these USB cards. So if you want to see the music videos, go buy one of these USB cards. It's only $20. You've spent, you know, more money for things worth far less than this.
Does that include shipping?
Yes. Nice. Yes. Yeah. Unless you're in like Canada or outside of the U.S.
Got it. Very nice. Check them out at CaptainKickass.com. All right, let's go to your calls here. Charles is calling us from Alamogordo, New Mexico, listening to KENN. Go ahead, Charles.
Hello, guys. It's been a while since I talked to you.
Welcome, Charles. Sir. You're
hey, I was calling because of what you were talking about earlier about the hedge funds and people who are responsible for all that. And I realized that not so long ago, my trailer park where I live at, yeah, I live in a trailer, but it's a nice trailer park. And it exchanged hands recently, about 9-10 months ago.
Okay.
And I got tired every month. Someone would come over here claiming to be a manager, give me a letter of threat to evict because I didn't pay my rent.
And
I got receipts. I got all the proof, everything, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I got tired of it on the eighth time. I got really upset, and she was acting wild. The manager was. She was running up on my steps at my trailer. I own the house, but I'm renting the land.
Sure, that's pretty common with a trailer park, right? You own the trailer, but you got to pay the park rent.
Yes, sir. And I filed a complaint because for trespassing, violating my rights, impeding on my rights to just keep back and relax, right?
Mm-hmm.
For eight times, and I got receipts to prove all this, and they've never ever evicted me or did it officially as far as giving me the paperwork, okay?
Yeah.
And they're trespassing, and they don't even understand what the law is because they are. They have to send me a request or get in touch with me to have an interview so they can come over, make an appointment. They cannot just come to you and say, hey, you owe us money. And not only that, they did that in front of a client of mine. He's going to invest $5,000 in a laundry mat, and I lost my client because of that, because he's here and I can't pay my bills.
Yeah, that doesn't look good.
Okay, check this out. In New Mexico, you have 20 days to answer the complaint from the plaintiff to defend it to the courts, right? You got 20 days.
Okay.
So they didn't answer. They didn't say nothing. They, acquiescence is guilt. And I went ahead and filed for default, judgment for default.
Yep.
Okay, 10 days surpassed. And 7 days later, then I get a letter.
And hold on, just before you go on, Charles, you're suing them based on what?
For trespassing.
Isn't that a criminal? Isn't that a criminal charge?
Yeah, it should be.
It sure is. It's a misdemeanor, high misdemeanor.
No. You can't bring criminal charges against anyone.
Right.
In this country.
That's what I thought. So how are you?
But trespass is since it's basically a form of theft, they have damaged you, so you can sue them for the money lost. There.
So this is a civil court case.
Yes, sir. It's a magistrate, small claims.
I see. Okay.
So, anyways, all times have passed, and then this letter comes in to me and the courts dated at a certain date, and they didn't answer the complaint, they didn't answer the judgment for default, and then they waited 6-7 days thereafter. Then we got something to the courts. I mean, the law already says then it's up to the lawyer, the judge, to make his decision what he wants to do, how he's going to proceed with them paying you.
Yeah.
If I'm correct, I'm asking for your help, too, on this. But the thing, the big surprise is I found out who the landlord is. And his name is Jarkissi, George Jarkissi. He was involved. He was charged and he was recently sentenced on May 19th. Summer 2011 for $24 million under management. SEC eventually ruled that both Mr. Jarkissi and funds advisor Patriot 28 misrepresented who served as a prime broker and auditor the funds perimeter, so safeguard, and the funds assets in order to increase the fees they charged.
You're saying he was involved in an SEC lawsuit that they sued him?
No, they charged him.
They charged him.
The money. Yes.
Okay. So this guy who was in a hedge fund has now gone and bought himself a trailer park.
Check this out. He was not only the hedge fund manager, he was a brokerage CEO, and they charged him with fraud.
So he got found responsible or guilty of that fraud?
I'll read it to you by quote. I mean, here I go. Washington, D.C., March 22nd, 2013, Securities and Exchange Commission today announced charges against the Houston-based hedge fund manager and his firm accused of defrauding investors to hedge funds and steering bloated fees to a brokerage from CEO who also was charged in the SEC.
So is this this was a criminal charge?
This is the guy I have to take to court, and he sent it. Okay, watch.
Just to clarify something in your story, Charles. You said that the manager of the trailer park is coming around trying to collect from you when you'd already paid them. Was this happening before this new guy bought the park, or did that start happening afterwards?
Absolutely not. Never ever happened before in my life.
I see.
And I was very passive about it, you know, until it got nasty. And I got tired of being infringed upon. And I'm a common law man. I believe in the Constitution. And everything and every word is so poetic, it touches my heart.
So what happened in your case? You said that they didn't respond within the official 20-day time window, but then later on they sent some sort of response?
Yeah, after the time allotted by the courts and the statute in New Mexico, they had passed, okay? In other words, they defaulted. Plain and simple, that's what the meaning means.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but they did send something. So what is the judge doing?
The papers I got that they filed with the courts 6-7 days afterwards, so after the allotted time. If motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction, which I laugh at, request for a hearing, and motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction.
But they're late, and you'd already filed for a motion for a default judgment.
And you know what? You know what just put the icing on the whole pie? Let me tell you guys. Yesterday, an old man, I guess a new manager, because they fired the other lady, suspected of me, and he comes to me and he has an envelope in his hand. He goes, "I'm sorry, Charles." He goes, "They just asked me to give this to you." I grabbed it. Okay, he's an old man. Okay, I've never seen him before in my life. It's a new manager, come to find out. And it says there it's from the attorney of this guy. Yeah. The envelope has her business. The sticker on there, which says Courvoisier Law, LLC.
And what do they want?
1101. Huh?
What do they want? What's the...
Guess what they gave me? Another bill saying I owed them money still.
Wow.
They had the nerve to do it again.
Wow, this sucks, man. I mean, it's got to be frustrating having been in a place where everything was cool, that you were paying the rent, the park rent, they were leaving you alone, and then all of a sudden, some new guy...
I was in a head-on collision just 3 months ago also.
Damn. My
Cadillac, $100,000 truck. It wasn't even my fault. And the poor lady, you know, God bless her.
So you're still waiting for the judge to rule on your motion at this point. That's in play right now?
Well, hearing had to be set thereafter, after I filed, you know, motion for judgment for default. So I was waiting, and then nothing. They said, "Don't worry, it's on the judge's desk, and he's going to rule on it, whatever, you know, we'll have a hearing, I guess." And I go back and check the week following up on everything, and the lady says, "We got something in here recently," and that's when I just picked this up.
Okay, so this is in play right now. If you want, feel free to give us a call back with an update on this. It's an interesting case, and thank you for the call tonight, Charles, and I wish you the best on this one. That sucks, man. Having it, you know, being in a park, everything's cool, then some new a-hole buys the park from whoever it was that owned it before. You really got along with the previous owner, and now all of a sudden he's trying to claim you didn't pay the park rent, even though you did pay the park rent. And now, before you know it, you're in court. And
well, there's a thing that can happen sometimes, and I only know this because I've been through it. I was renting an apartment in a 4-unit building, and the landlord there wasn't a sign out in the yard, but it was for sale. He was in the process of selling it, and so within that, for some reason, there's a business reason, the current owner. Because the property was under contract, he stopped paying the mortgage on it. And so that resulted in every one of the tenants getting a little notice on the door from somebody official that said, hey, you know, this property's being foreclosed upon, you know, this kind of a thing. And it made you think that, you know, you better find a new place to live. To this landlord's credit, the selling landlord, he came to all of us before any of this actually happened and said, "Look, I'm pretty seasoned at doing this stuff. This is kind of how I you know, make my living, how I do my business. I buy properties and then I resell them. Yeah. Sometimes I fix them up. Sometimes it's just a market thing." But he's like, "So what's probably going to happen is you are going to receive a notice of some kind. There might be some people coming around who are, you know, from government or whatever, saying all sorts of things that might scare you. Don't worry about it. It's all dialed in. I have plenty of experience doing this. It's just part of the transaction of the real estate business. Okay. This is in Washington State, so and this is a guy who is obviously on top of his game, or at least when it comes to these transactions. So we did continue to pay the selling landlord our rent.
Right.
That rent money never made it to the mortgage company until,
not your problem.
Until the closing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I could see, you know, maybe somebody who's not savvy in real estate participating in one of these things, not really knowing full well what the deal was, you know, getting confused and thinking, oh, I need to go and collect the rent from these people, even though it's already been collected from the previous landlord and all that money passed through via the sale.
Hmm.
Because the sale can't go through unless all of the rent is collected from the tenants. In a commercial real estate transaction.
Huh.
So I could see there being some sort of, I don't know what applies in New Mexico, so this guy's situation might be completely different from what I'm describing, but I'm just saying that there can be some, like, underlap.
It could just be this guy's a scumbag. I mean, this new owner.
Yeah, could be that he's just a scumbag looking to, you know, prey on people who don't know any better.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. Well, I wish Charles the best. Let's go to another call in New Mexico. Sarah is on the line in Albuquerque. Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, so the city had decided to wrap the city buses, three of them, with Pueblo native art. And mostly it's to impress the tourists that come and visit.
You think that's going to work?
Look at how beautiful our buses are. Aren't they Southwestern?
Just don't look inside.
Well, the thing is that before the city sold out to advertisement business, and we still have those. And I just thought, I just kind of went along and it's one more stupid thing that the city that does. And you can't
Hold on. Which one's the stupid thing? The advertising?
Right.
You have to understand, in business, and I know you don't know anything about this because you've never worked a day in your adult life, but in business, which, to be fair, the city isn't really a business. I mean, their taxpayer money is propping up the bus.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if anything, they're double dipping because tax money is paying for, the buses, or at least the initial investment, and
but
then
in theory,
they're making money on top of it by charging advertising.
Well, we don't know if they're making money. That's the thing. In theory, they should be able to recoup their costs of running this bus program by doing things like selling advertising so the taxpayers don't have to pay for it. So there's nothing inherently wrong with the idea of selling advertising. Of course, they are the government, and they just suck at everything that they do, so I'm sure that they're still in the red even after getting whatever ad revenue in. And so, but you don't like it, Sarah, because of what? It's an eyesore? You don't like looking at it?
I mean, I've seen these, like, the auto dealer commercials with their ugly face on TV. It's bad enough that I got to see them on TV. Now you got a giant mug of this guy's face on the buses, the whole side of the bus. I'm like, I'm just like, I mean, are they going to just give it up?
Come on down to Crazy Larry's Used Bus Emporium.
Well, maybe they are giving up. Maybe that's why they're putting the Indian artwork on the buses. Maybe they've realized that it's just not even worth doing, and you know what? They've got all this government money, so why bother?
Well, it is. I mean, what does the tourists get impressed with? Wherever they come from, they see advertisement everywhere. They come here, they see the same commercials, lawyer commercials, all on the bus. What's the point? That doesn't impress anybody. I mean, we're trying to attract tourists for tourism, and they're not seeing.
I don't think that that's going to be the linchpin of whether or not tourists are impressed with their visit to Albuquerque. Like, to me, that is that's not even worth talking about.
Hey, Peekless, we're trying to decide on where to go for our tourism vacation, and I'm told that Albuquerque has some really nice art on their buses. Should we go there?
Well, I mean, I was going to go see the Grand Canyon, but you say there's art on the buses?
That's right, yeah.
Thank you for the call tonight, Sarah. We appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. Well, at least in Albuquerque, their buses aren't being targeted by cluster bombs, which is happening apparently now.
They're not being targeted by cluster bombs yet.
Yeah, thank goodness. Just wait until the U.S. government starts a war with the drug cartels, and we'll see if that changes.
Well, I have it on good authority that the use of cluster bombs is unacceptable.
This is what I believe over 100 or 120 countries have agreed, that the use of cluster bombs is unacceptable, and they have signed a treaty.
Do we know what a cluster bomb is?
We will get into that here shortly. They've signed a treaty, and I don't know if this article mentions the number exactly, but I've seen it elsewhere. I believe it is well over 100. And they've decided that cluster bombs are particularly nasty as far as bombs are concerned. Obviously, all bombs probably not good. But if you're going to choose a bomb to use, maybe don't choose one that breaks apart in the air, according to TheGuardian.com, and releases multiple explosive submunitions or bomblets across a wide area.
There is a fine illustration of this in Iron Man 1.
Okay.
There's, you know, they're given some sort of a demo for Stark Technologies, you know, it's the classic walk away with an explosion in the background scene, right? Where they show in the background the bomb that explodes in the air, and then mini explosions after that explode, and shrapnel goes everywhere, piercing everything. It is devastating.
Yeah, that's the movie version where it actually does blow up as intended. You'll learn the real-life version is very different. So they can be delivered by planes, artillery, missiles, according to the International Committee of the Red Cross. The bomblets, as they're called, are designed to detonate upon hitting the ground, and anyone in that area is very likely to be killed or seriously injured. Beyond the initial damage caused by the munitions upon impact, many bomblets fail to detonate immediately. In fact, up to 40% of these bomblets have failed to explode in some recent conflicts, according to the Red Cross Committee.
What's the old phrase? Good enough for the government.
Good enough for government work. So the reason that that these are more or less universally considered a big no-no is not because, well, that's just too efficient of a way of delivering explosives. It's, yeah, that seems to be an efficient way to deliver unexploded bombs to random areas.
Correct, where little children might be coming around after the war's over and picking up these little bomblets. I don't know how big they are, but the idea being that average people, more of them, because obviously average people die in conflicts and it's tragic and that's why war shouldn't happen at all, but even more regular people who come around to fill whatever areas they are after the war is over will come across these unexploded bombs and possibly go ahead and set them off.
And bomblets, you know, sound like less menacing than bombs. Yeah. It's kind of like Muppet Babies, right? It's you know, they take a thing and make a tiny thing out of it. And like,
bomblet, you know, babies.
Yeah, I could see them like having a little bomblet character and advertising in the public schools to like the first graders or whatever. Like, we're bomblets and we're going to go over to another country and not completely explode.
Sounds like a device that needs a pacifier.
They indeed, like landmines, pose risks to civilians long after their use. Unexploded ordnance from cluster bombs can kill and maim people years or even decades after the munitions were fired. Human rights groups say the use of the cluster bombs in populated areas is a violation of international humanitarian law. And guess what? The United States government is going to be sending to Ukraine. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
Attention. Your money is now controlled by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000, 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
USA News Update. A suspect was on the loose after a shooting, killing four people on Saturday near Atlanta. Authorities have identified the suspect as Andre Longmore. Escaped prisoner Michael Burham is back behind bars after a week-long hunt for the dangerous fugitive. The homicide suspect, who is said to have survivalist skills, broke out of a Pennsylvania jail through the roof late Friday. A third of the nation is dealing with scorching temperatures. The National Weather Service has posted extreme heat advisories from Southern California to Texas. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is stepping down as the head of the Rainbow Push Coalition. The 81-year-old civil rights leader and two-time presidential candidate is expected to announce his successor on Sunday. Jackson was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2017. Jerry Varmash, USA News.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue them up. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good, they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Yeah! It's Free Talk Live. And yes, you may join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. Maybe you want to comment on the cluster bombs. Shout out. And we've been focusing on the cryptocurrency world. You can certainly comment on that. But right now, the latest in what hopefully will never become World War III, but could, it is the conflict in Ukraine, where the United States is backing their puppets in the Ukrainian state that they allegedly installed in 2014. In their conflict with Russia, where Russia, for those that aren't familiar, claims that they're over there just to support the secessionist movement in the Donbass region of Ukraine, which now Russia says is part of Russia because the people there voted earlier, was it late last year, early this year? Anyway, they had a vote, and the rest of the world, the Western world, doesn't recognize it, countries like the United States. And another thing that the United States government thugs do not recognize is the treaty that was created in 2008. It is called the Convention on Cluster Munitions. It's an international treaty that prohibits all use, transfer, production, and stockpiling of cluster munitions, which is this weapon that we were describing to you in the last segment that essentially explodes and distributes its quote-unquote bomblets over a certain area. I'm not sure how large that area is, but these little smaller bombs that apparently as many as 40% do not explode upon impact, which is what they're supposed to do. So therefore you have all these bomblets scattered about, And as a result of that, well, later on, when just normal people are going about their normal daily business, they get blown up. According to TheGuardian.com, in a sort of Q&A explainer article published recently about these cluster bombs, they say human rights groups say the use of cluster bombs in populated areas is a violation of international humanitarian law because they cause indiscriminate destruction. 60% of cluster bomb casualties are people who are injured while undertaking everyday activities, according to Reuters.
60%. Wow.
That's right. One-third of all recorded cluster munitions casualties are children. So therefore, more than 100, and they say 120 countries here, Wikipedia says it's 111, but either way, it's a lot, of countries have signed this convention on cluster munitions, which prohibits the use of production.
There's only like 200 countries on planet Earth anyway.
Guess which countries haven't signed it. Pick three.
China, Russia, and the U.S.
Okay, Russia and the U.S. have not signed it.
And
also,
Ukraine. Right.
And you're correct. China is also not on that list. Yeah, but
because when you're on the High Council of War, you don't have to, you know, follow international laws.
But even some of the other big, G7 types of countries, the United Kingdom, they've signed it. Canada, they've signed it. And Mexico's not on the G7, but Mexico has signed it as well.
You gotta be strong and murder children.
Japan has signed it.
So what does the treaty say, basically, that you can't have or stockpile clusters?
You cannot use, have, or stockpile.
You can't use,
transfer.
Them
you can't even sell them.
Okay.
Okay, you gotta get.
I was thinking for a minute that like it makes sense that like a bunch of countries who sort of get their arms from the U.S. might sign this if the U.S. could just give them to them.
They're not allowed to
according
transfer.
To the treaty, right.
And according to
Enforces this treaty?
I don't know.
No one.
Whatever this convention is, the Convention on Cluster Munitions. According to the story,
honor system.
99% of global stockpiles have been destroyed, according to the Cluster Munition Coalition, since the adoption.
What did they do, drop a cluster bomb on them?
The weapons were first used in the Second World War, and at least 15 countries have used them in the years after, according to Reuters, including Eritrea, Ethiopia, France, Israel, Morocco, the Netherlands, Britain, Russia, and the United States. The U.S. dropped an estimated 260 million cluster munitions in Laos between 1964 and 1973. So far, fewer than 400,000, that's 0.47% of what they dropped, have been cleared, and at least 11,000 people have been killed, according to Reuters.
Well, hold on. So there was like a billion of these things on Earth?
Maybe so.
I mean, check my math here, but like if America dropped over 100,000 of these things,
260 million, they said.
Oh, sorry.
In a 10-year period.
If America dropped 200 million of these, and 99% of them were destroyed, that's over 2 billion of these things that did exist.
Perhaps so. And I don't know if they're counting the bomblets when they count that, or the containers.
Yeah. Tough call.
Either way.
You were saying, what did they do, drop a cluster bomb on it? Well, they would have only gotten rid of about half if they had.
How does one destroy bombs?
Carefully.
Yeah, very carefully.
Very carefully.
I mean, we've not heard of like some sort of industrial space shuttle carrying these munitions out into space and hurling towards the sun, right?
That's true.
All right, so we don't know that they've actually been destroyed.
They say Russian troops have used cluster munitions in populated areas in Ukraine, according to research by The Guardian, which has resulted in the deaths of scores of civilians. Ukraine has also used cluster bombs in efforts to retake Russian-occupied territory, according to Human Rights Watch. So essentially, Ukraine is going to be peppered with these bomblets from here until they're gone. And they're going to be gone by either somehow detecting and dealing with them, or just average people accidentally setting them off by walking next to them, or however it is you set these things off. And now the United States has said, we're going to go ahead and add some more bomblets to the party here, and they're going to send even more of these things over to the Ukrainian government. And this is what's been in the news in the last couple of weeks because, well, again, these over 100-plus countries say this is a human rights violation, this is a war crime, and the funny thing is, the Biden administration a year ago or so was saying that this was a war crime.
Hmm. Yeah, I've seen the footage of,
right.
I'm trying to, what was her name, the redhead?
Psaki.
P. Psaki, saying that if Russia uses cluster munitions against the Ukraine, it will be considered a war crime. And this is from a couple of years ago. And then most recently, the headline was, U.S. to send cluster munitions to Ukraine.
I got her right here. Here she is. This was... I don't know if it gives the original date of this, but whenever the hell she was in office, which was like a year or so ago,
or
maybe 2 years.
Illegal cluster bombs and vacuum bombs being used by the Russians. If that's true, what is the next step of this administration? And is there a red line for how much violence will be tolerated against civilians in this manner that's illegal and potentially a war crime?
It is. It would be. I don't have any confirmation of that. We have seen the reports. If that
it would be. So that was her answer to, is this a war crime? It would be. If the Russians, which they say, were using these cluster bombs, would that be a war crime? Yeah, it would.
If that were true, it would potentially be a war crime. Obviously, there are a range of international fora that would assess that. So certainly we would look to that to be a part of that conversation.
There are reports of...
Okay, I think they're going to replay it there. So there you go. And now here we are a year or so later, a year and a half later, and now the United States government is saying, oh, well, it's not a war crime when we do it. It's not a war crime when our guys drop these
bombs. It
would
only be a war crime if Russia did it to Ukraine. Whereas
right.
if Ukraine did it to Russia, it would be whatever the opposite of a war crime is.
Yep. So
it's just math.
If your neighbor shoots your dog, that's a crime. But if a cop shoots your dog, it's not a crime.
It's necessary. They were
fearing for their life.
They are doing their duty. Yeah.
They were fearing for their life.
Yep. So there you go. I don't know how many of these cluster munitions they have sent over there. I don't know if they have been sent yet, but they're going
to
send them.
I mean, if you needed a reason to be a conscientious objector
yeah, sure.
Here you go.
I object.
Here you go. I mean, just war in general. And not even official or unofficial war, the warlike activities that governments engage in routinely, specifically the United States government, where they continuously bomb people in faraway lands that you've never met, you've never heard of, you have no quarrel with, and yet they send your sons, your daughters, your fathers, your sisters and brothers off to go and murder these people and drop cluster bombs on them.
Yep, absolutely. If you want to comment, you can join the show here. The number is 603-283-6160.
But what we really need to be focused on here is whose cocaine was in the White House.
Well, I mean, so...
And whether or not that Titanic submarine was built properly. But these are really the pressing issues of our day.
I'm convinced the White House is just made out of cocaine.
Yeah,
it is the White House.
It's called the White House.
So, what, this has never happened before? I find that a little unlikely.
Well, what's never happened is they've never announced it.
Right.
Well, now, for some reason, it's worthy of a press release.
Yeah, because they don't want you thinking about the economy, and they don't want you thinking about the war.
Mm-hmm.
You can bet your babushka that if some rando business had a baggie of cocaine found at it, and the authorities found out about it, they wouldn't be like, oh, well, it's just not possible for us to figure it out.
Yeah, we can't figure it out.
Well, like, really? You've got all of the surveillance technology has ever been invented working 24/7 for you. The White House is one of the most secure places on planet Earth with constant video and audio surveillance for you not to be able to figure out who was there, who opened that cabinet, who placed the baggie in there, who was in there last.
Horse hockey.
Well, I, for one, am going home and painting my house white so that if a baggie of cocaine is found there, they won't try and find out whose it is and charge them with anything.
Ooh, that's a good reason to paint my house white.
Right?
Let's go to the phones here, guys. I got somebody on the line. You're on Free Talk Live. Caller, what is your name?
Hey, this is Rusty from Portland.
Rusty, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, so I was thinking about the ripple rolling.
Yes, sir.
And I think it's better than you think it is.
Okay, why?
Well, not only did they say that if they sell it on exchange, it's not a security, they also said algorithmic sales are not a security.
So what does that mean? What's an algorithmic sale?
That could be something like an airdrop or a public sale, like the old ICOs. And
so initial coin offerings would be considered not a security?
Oh, I bet they would.
If they're selling directly to the public and not to, like, an institution.
Gotcha.
Or an institutional investor. If there's not a private pre-sale.
Gotcha.
Well, that's what an ICO is. It's a pre-sale.
Well, some of the okay.
Well, I mean, I think that depends on how you do it. So, like, if you're offering to, like, specific investors, yeah, then I think they would consider it a security. But it sounds like if you are just making it open to all comers, whoever wants to invest in this as an initial coin offering, that might not
no,
be.
No, I don't think so. The Ripple ruling said that Ripple sales, and the library ruling said that library sales, also libraries giveaways, counted as selling unregistered securities.
Mm.
So I think the initial coin offering would count as a unregistered security sale. Based on my understanding of these rulings, by no means is this legal advice.
Right.
Well, like Ethereum, when they had their public sale, there was no like marketing with it that this coin's going to go up in value. We're going to put money into making this coin go up in value. And that was one of the problems with the Ripple thing.
But that we know of, okay? So one of the things that they did in the library case, as I understand it, was they found some guy who was, like, formerly an employee of library who made a statement on a Reddit forum somewhere about that he thought library was going to go up in value, and so therefore that was library making a statement about it could go up in value. I don't know what the exact circumstances were, but they had some, like, really obtuse, obscure example of how library, quote-unquote, was promoting that this could go up in value, or somebody on a private email or something suggested some customer service agent or whatever. As long as one person associated with the company makes any kind of hint that this thing could go up in value, that may be enough for them to just say, well, guilty.
Despite the fact that that's how the market has played out in cryptocurrency thus far.
That it has gone up in value over time?
Most of cryptocurrencies have gone up since their initial launch, if you will.
Yeah, I would say this is by no means a closed case or anything like that, and I would be very hesitant if I were in charge of any of these companies to make a decision based on this one ruling.
Right. They also found that when the CEO, Brad, whoever, sold his tokens, that was not selling the security.
Okay.
So
that's interesting.
If you can interpret that, that means teams can be paid in tokens, and the team members can sell the tokens without having to worry about that if the precedent holds.
That's important point here. This holds,
and it's also worth pointing out that given how slow the court system works, this will be the going rule for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like even if we can crystal ball this and say absolutely certainly this will be appealed and the appeal will find in the other direction, that's a good long way off.
That much is true. Anything else, caller, you want to share?
No, that was it. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Rusty.
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
remember.
I wonder if Wizards of the Coast or someone like that, you know, who their product has a tendency historically to very much go up in value, at least in some cases. I wonder if they send out emails to tell everyone, these do not go up in value and you are not allowed to tell anyone otherwise.
To their staff members?
Just to cover their butt on this.
Maybe. If you want to comment, the number is 603-283-6160.
It's funny that Wizards of the Coast and Magic the Gathering keep coming up, particularly around the cryptocurrency conversations.
Well, I mean, we're all Magic the Gathering dorks.
Oh, because Mt. Gox?
So.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Because Mt. Gox was MTG, Magic the Gathering Online Exchange.
Well, you pretty much had to be a computer nerd in order to get into cryptocurrency at the time Mt. Gox was around. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense that the Venn diagram of Magic players, which are likely nerds and probably many of them familiar with computers, would overlap the programmer types and the early libertarian nerds.
That is true. Working in tech, I found a whole bunch of people play Magic the Gathering, right? Whether it's an IT guy or a developer, and QA and tech support and all those people, everybody's in on the game. And it does have parallels to software. We talk about the stack all the time, and software has a stack, and that's how instructions come in and go out and all that kind of stuff. So there are similarities, but I just find it fascinating that Wizards of the Coast, specifically Magic the Gathering, continues to be tied in conversation to cryptocurrency, not just here on this show.
Well, it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. One of them being that, say, your Black Lotus card, its value is fundamentally because of its scarcity. As a supply.
Yeah.
So if they were still making Black Lotus cards, it wouldn't have the value that it commands. Whereas since they are not, and there's only so many that will ever exist in the same way, just
right.
like, oh, there's only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoin,
right.
or, you know, whichever the cap for a particular thing is, or, oh, well, the issuing rate is X, Y, or Z for, like, Monero or whatever. In all of this, and as with currency, its value is directly proportional to its limited supply.
Right. I've used the Magic the Gathering analogy to describe a cryptocurrency exchange to, well, some nerds.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because in the game Magic the Gathering, you have mana. It's either green, black, white, red. I'm missing a color there. Blue. Thank you. Sometimes you only have blue, but you need a red.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how to get one. Well, there'll be a card that comes up that allows you to do something that's called mana washing. This is, you can spend two blue into this card, and you get one red mana. So now you can get your one red mana to make your play go. Well, this is what an exchange does, a cryptocurrency exchange. You pay a little small fee to take your, I don't know, Bitcoin cash and transduce it into Dash.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's exactly like mana washing.
Like magic.
Yeah, it's exactly like mana washing in the game Magic the Gathering. So if you play Magic the Gathering, you probably already have a nice analogous model for understanding the basics of cryptocurrency exchanging.
Well, and I mean, the process of mining is kind of like having land in that sense. So, like, if you have a nice mining rig, it will, with a certain amount of regularity, give you something that is powerful, that you can use to perform effects in the real world.
Yeah, they call this a mana ramp in the game, right?
Right.
It's how fast you get enough mana to power your biggest plays.
Right. Right, and that is a very analogous thing. Now, another thing that's analogous on this one, and why Mt. Gox came from the Magic the Gathering online exchange.
Mt. Gox, by the way, the first ever cryptocurrency, Bitcoin only at time exchange.
Right.
But it wasn't designed as
Right. It was designed for cards.
Right.
And the reason that this was, I think, a really effective changeover was because just like with these Magic the Gathering cards, you need to verify the thing. You need to be sure that you actually have the thing. You know, just like, okay, well, here's a purportedly gold coin. I better bite it, make sure that it's actually, you know, has the malleability of gold. So, like, a little quick test to be like, okay, yes, this is what I think it is.
Right.
And in the same way, with these electric cards, like these digital cards, you want to have some way where you can test and verify.
NFTs.
Right.
Well, the nice thing about cryptocurrency is that because of its decentralization, because of the distributed nature of it, and because of the cryptographic security behind it, you can verify these things easily.
Yes.
I can't just give you a fake Bitcoin. If it's not on the Bitcoin blockchain, it isn't the same thing, and everybody in the world knows this, in the world of the cryptocurrencies, of the exchanges. You can't just send a fake Bitcoin into a cryptocurrency exchange. It just isn't going to work like that, because the checks and the balances on the system are inherently baked into the blockchain and the math and the cryptocurrency behind it, or the cryptographic security behind it. And that's what the miners are out there, and the full nodes are helping support, and the master nodes with Dash and things like that. But with Magic the Gathering cards, I mean, all you have to do is have a really high quality printer in China, and you can knock out some really effective knockoffs. Mm-hmm. There's a website that I purchased a set of the original beta series, which was the original, or almost the original series of Magic the Gathering from like 1993 or whenever it was. And, you know, it cost like $170 for this thing, but I got every single card that was in this beta series that right now, some of these individual cards will sell for thousands of dollars if you have the original real McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
And now, to be fair, this guy that's behind this company or whatever, he's like, he's not trying to scam anybody. So he changed the backside of the card to look completely different than what the original. So you wouldn't be able to pawn these off as the originals.
Right.
But I mean, that's just because
he used them to play.
That's just right. But that's just because he's got scruples, and there could very well be, you know, somebody who doesn't have those scruples that could try to knock these cards off.
The difference here, I think, is important to illustrate, is that for Magic the Gathering cards, the physical cards themselves, versus Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, the verification step in Magic the Gathering cards needs to take place by human beings.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be an expert who can identify this is a real deal OG Black Lotus card from the first edition in 1992 or whatever year it was. Whereas cryptocurrency, you don't need that third party.
You
don't need that third party. And that's the beautiful, that's always, like, I can't harp on this enough to our listeners, and you need to harp on it to other people, that is the difference. That's the big difference. You no longer need
a
centralized, you know, monolithic structure of, you know, supposed trust to verify the authenticity of your transaction or your Bitcoin. It is no longer necessary. Math takes the place.
Right.
Math provides the trust. That's why cryptocurrency is superior.
Yeah, it really is part of the beauty of the technology that, like, I can hand you a fake gold coin, but I simply cannot hand you a fake Bitcoin.
Right. That's right.
So it would be as if attempting to fake it made it cease to exist, so that there simply were not, as if physics itself would not allow you to make a fake gold coin. That really is what this technology is like. And in the case of a digital Magic the Gathering card, some amount of programming skills and computing technology might allow me to attempt to pass off this fake digital Magic the Gathering card into this exchange, and then they would have to go through the trouble of printing it or of verifying it, whereas the nature of this thing even being mined and moved means that it already has this tremendous amount of, like, the top supercomputers could not get you to the computing power of verification of this thing.
Right.
Just to send it in the first place, it already has that behind it on every single transaction.
Coming up in about a half an hour, you can join these guys for Beard Talk Live. That will be happening at 10:30 Eastern Time over on our various different video streaming platforms, including Odyssey. You can watch over at watch.freetalklive.com. Again, that starts at 10:30 Eastern, so stay tuned for that. Otherwise, we'll see you at freetalklive.com.
Attention, your money is now controlled by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.